It's a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022, returning MOI Global Instructor Roshan Padamadan, Chairman at Luminance Capital. Roshan is a global investor and splits his time between New York, Singapore, and other countries in Asia. Previously, he served as COO, Risk and Compliance Officer at 16th Street Capital based in Singapore. His erstwhile Luminance Global Fund had a global unconstrained investment strategy looking at special situations and deep value. Prior to launching Luminance in 2013, Roshan also spent more than 7 years with the HSBC Group, including more than 3 years with HSBC Asset Management as a product specialist. He worked for the highly commended offshore Indian equity team, which ran $5+ billion US dollars from Singapore, including a $100+ million award-winning India hedge fund. Roshan has earned an MBA in management from Indian Institute of Management, Ahmedabad. He holds the CFA, FRM, and CAIA charters and speaks more than 5 languages. And Roshan, the MOI community has benefited greatly from your presentations in the past and all the wisdom and insights you've shared with us over the years. And we very much look forward to your presentation today as well. I will now turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, for the kind introduction. It's always a pleasure to participate in the MOI Investment Summits. This time, I want to present Volkswagen, a famous German company, as you might all know. Of course, it's very much global in scope with production in around the world in almost all continents. And this company was one of the first major car makers to commit to going electric, but they still have some way to go. But I see signs that the pivot is happening, and this makes it very interesting for us to study. Let me go into the presentation. So we have Volkswagen with more than 70 plants where they make cars. They in fact have more than 120 plants, but they also make commercial vehicles and other things in the other plants. The car production alone is more than 40,000 cars per day. They have plants in China. China is important for current and future demand. And all the major car makers of the world need a presence in China, and Volkswagen is definitely there. If you look at the brand portfolio of Volkswagen, many people might know that Volkswagen owns the Porsche brand. The Porsche operating company belongs to Volkswagen. It also has the Audi brand, Skoda. Some of these were acquisitions along the way. They own Lamborghini. They own Bentley, the high-end brand. They also own the famous Ducati brand for bikes. In the wider segment of trucks, Scania also belongs to Volkswagen, MAN. And people who are riding buses in Asia might see Scania and MAN on the bus names. These are very popular, comfortable long-distance buses in Houston, Singapore, Vietnam, etc. Now, in earlier days when we analyzed companies, if you have a lot of stuff, it was a sign of strength. Nowadays, it's not always a sign of strength. But the fact remains that Volkswagen is a really large employer at the global level with more than 660,000 people. Usually, electric car manufacturers are much slimmer because you need much fewer staff. Many of the listeners might be familiar with the fact that electric cars have as little as like 18 parts because the sub-assemblies make up the car, whereas a normal car has thousands of parts which make up the car. So typically the amount of labor involved in assembling the car is much smaller. It is well suited to automation. So typically if Volkswagen are starting anew in electric vehicles, they will have far fewer staff. So this remains one of the challenges they have to address over time. They would probably have to shrink to be profitable in employee strength. So that's something to keep in mind. They know how to sell cars in more than 153 countries. This is a strength because that means you already have a network of dealers. You have established customers, so you know how to reach them. You or through your dealer network know how to reach customers. So that's a useful asset to have. And because ultimately, electric cars are still a product. You need to sell it to customers. You need a marketing and a sales pipeline as well. We have gone through a difficult 2 years during COVID. COVID also exposed a supply chain shortage or a crunch in the car market, car industry, where a lot of cars were waiting for chips, which run parts of the car. Sometimes there's a chip in the window, there's a chip for the steering wheel, there's a chip for different parts of the cars, various parts of the car's process being automated. So there was a shortage of chips, which led to a lot of car makers not being able to operate at full capacity. With all that said, Volkswagen still made 8.2 million cars in 2021, which makes it one of the largest car makers in the whole world. The only others at the same size are companies like Toyota and Hyundai at the global level. Now, they have factories in all continents except Australia. Australia, they don't have any production. And the headquarters of Volkswagen is in Wolfsburg, and they have the world's largest car plant there. You know, at 70 million square feet, it's really gigantic. And this car plant focuses on mostly the Volkswagen brand, but they also have the space to adapt and expand and introduce new lines as well. The company has been focusing on its strategy to move to EV. So if you want to move such a large company with such large staff, it does take time. So they have a 2030 plan. The strategy is called New Auto, where they want to lower CapEx. So this is important. So while they're moving into EV, because of its fewer number of parts, actually compared to regular car making, it's actually more economical to do EV CapEx. You still need to spend on the battery supply chain. So either you make the batteries or you help your suppliers make the batteries close to you and you can get it delivered close to you. Volkswagen wants to go across the supply chain in terms of they're also setting up gigafactories to build batteries. But despite all of this, their CapEx as a percentage of sales actually goes down in the new strategy. They have they're aiming for a much higher return on sales. It goes from about 6% to 9%. So that's a 50% increase on return on sales metric. And their ROI currently is negative. They've had significant losses, operating losses, which they had to suffer in recent past. But when you look at the company as a running business going forward, you will see that that's where the opportunity arises. So you're able to buy this company. We'll discuss that in the valuation section. We are able to buy this company for much below book and even well below tangible book. And that's because ROE has been affected in the recent past. In the new strategy, ROE, they expect it to normalize to over 15% over the next 8 years. Now, I mentioned briefly that Volkswagen has many brands. So Volkswagen is, they use the Volkswagen brand for the mass market. They call it the volume segment. Audi is a luxury brand. So they call it the premium segment. And the sport brand is a Porsche. So that's how they position it. Now, while these are different marketing segments and different segments for the customer, behind the scenes, they can share a lot of things, including how different modules of the car are made. So the scalable systems platform is the mechanical parts of the car. They want to build and reuse the same technology across the different spectrum. Performance characteristics can be different. So a Porsche brake might be superior in terms of its braking ability. They might use a different material, but they can share very similar mechatronics. So that's where the scalable systems comes in. This gives Volkswagen the ability to offer greater volume to its suppliers and therefore negotiate better prices and get achieve better economies of scale. There is a big move to standardize the software across the entire chain of brands. So they're also currently they only develop 10% of their software. They buy the remaining software, but over the next 5 years, they want to move from 10% to 60% being developed in-house. So they want to standardize the software, and these are all costs. When they optimize, it results in higher profitability. So this is where the brands and the group will achieve economies of scale and scope by leveraging similar software, similar mechatronics, and similar technology. So currently, Volkswagen uses several kinds of batteries in different kinds of electric vehicle offerings they offer. Now, over the next few years, they will standardize it, and 80% of the batteries will be a similar technology. Right? This again gives them economies of scale. So whether you build it or you buy batteries, it's better for you to have a fewer number of models so that you can keep getting the benefit of economies of scale, and also spend more time on R&D on a few lines instead of spreading it thin over many different types of battery technology. So across the entire value chain, Volkswagen is counting on getting economies of scope across all of these layers. The fourth layer, they call it the mobility solutions. This one, I personally, I'm not holding my breath on this one. So mobility solutions is essentially where autonomous cars kick in, and Volkswagen would also run, let's say, robot taxis. So you might be aware that Tesla has been talking about robot taxis for some time. I think there are still a lot of challenges for autonomous driving. So on this one, I'm not holding my breath, but despite that, you can still do rental cars, and supplying rental cars is a way to fulfill demand for people who don't have cars. So I'm more than 40 years old, but I've never owned a car. I've lived in 3-4 continents, many countries. I had many different residence permits in different places. Never felt the need to own a car. And there is a generation of people who don't have a car. If they need a car, they can rent a car. So mobility solutions is to supply cars for people who need it. Robotaxis is one part of mobility solutions. It's not the only part of mobility solutions. Now, overall, this mix of cars over time will be increasingly electric vehicles. And that's what is leading to the decarbonization, which is spoken about at the bottom layer. Many people in the US would be very aware that California has mandated that internal combustion engines will not be sold anymore after 2035. Similarly, there's also an EU mandate. In EU, there's a similar mandate that internal combustion engines will be phased out after 2035. So that's the background on where Volkswagen is making these plans to bring synergies across their brands. For the consumer, the brands will still be different, but behind the scenes, Volkswagen can get economies of scale and scope. So I mentioned about the 2035 deadline, where internal combustion engines are going to go away. We have to remember that cars are not just tech. It's a combination of fashion and tech. So that's a phrase I always liked about cars. Consumers want to see new models. Sometimes the new models only might have cosmetic changes. Maybe there's some detailing, or the curve or the aerodynamics are slightly different, but it's still important for consumers to feel they have a new model, a new car, and so on and so forth. So Volkswagen is much better at introducing new models. They've built multiple brands over decades, and they've seen, so that knowledge of how to introduce a model to the market and position it and so on is also very useful. So it's not just about pure tech. Volkswagen is building 6 gigafactories. That's with a capacity of 240 gigawatt hour. Just to put it in perspective, so Tesla's Nevada plant is like at 100 gigawatt hour, and they still haven't reached that. It's a multi-year plan. So this is a very sizable capacity, 240 gigawatt hour. I mentioned earlier about how they want to improve their internal software development. then one of the other things you electric cars need is, I mean, to you need easy ways to charge it when you're on the move. So having a network of charging spots. So Tesla did this with the supercharger network, and that was important for its acceptance in the US. Similarly, if you want wide acceptance of EV, you need to have a wide charging network. So Volkswagen has plans for 45,000 spots. This is across the globe. So this is a split, the USA, Europe, and China. So these are the three main markets it's targeting. So this will be the focus of the EV market. Volkswagen will continue to sell in 150 countries, but the EV market will be focused on 20, 30 countries, all right? The Western European countries, US, and China. So this is important to understand. It may not be feasible to sell EV vehicles in all 150 countries. You could sell, but in other countries, the consumer will have to do their own charging, right? They might charge at home. There might be a few charging stations. All countries may not be ready for a full network rollout. Network rollout is costly. So manufacturers, even if the manufacturers cooperate and have interoperability between charging stations, I expect things to go towards interoperability. Just like initially all the banks had their own ATMs, then later on they would accept you using other bank cards at their ATM. So you no longer have to search for your bank. You can use other bank ATMs and you charge a small fee, extra fee for using another bank's ATM. That will be the similar evolution of charging spots. Initially, it might be only your customers, but later on, for better use of capital, it's better for everyone if everybody shares their charging spots, better for all the manufacturers. So that's how this will evolve over the next few years. I mentioned earlier about Volkswagen planning to streamline its battery development so that they all use the same cell. And this one has a very short timeline. By 2023, we will see if they meet this. So there are many points we can monitor Volkswagen along the way over the next 8 years to see if they are able to follow through. Sometimes very large companies might announce grand plans, but might fail to execute on it. They find it just too difficult to move so many people. I mean, moving 660,000 people will not be an easy task. But we'll have many opportunities to see if they are able to achieve what they said they will do. The single battery for 80% of the cars, whether they are able to increase their percentage of internal software. We can see it in another 3 years. So there are many, and we can see how the rollout of charging spots is happening again over the next 3 years. So there are many points we can monitor Volkswagen. I mentioned earlier about mobility solutions. So one of the things they have done is they bought a car. Is in the US. This is it's a car rental company. They have operations in many countries, so they know how to rent a car, and this is useful for Volkswagen. Now you are essentially a forward integrating, right? So the Europe car can offer more Volkswagen models, and Volkswagen has models at all sizes. So for a rental car customer, for a city use, they might want a small car. Intercity use, they might want a sedan with more comfort, and so on and so forth. Volkswagen has cars across all spectrum. So forward integration is, they also want this to work for mobility solutions as they introduce robot taxis, etc. But that's still something. I have a question mark on that, but it gives them the optionality to use Europe car to roll out shared cars and robot taxis in the future. Now, one of the current major worries for investors globally, I mean, apart from inflation, especially for investors in Europe, is the impact of the war in Ukraine. This is leading to a high cost of energy across Western Europe. Russian gas does supply most of Western Europe. And I was making an observation that all the pipes are interconnected, right? So it affects Switzerland, France, Netherlands, etc. It's not just countries which are close to the Russian border. The impact is all across Western Europe. This also flows through into Germany. The Wolfsburg plant will see higher costs, and this is something they are currently seeing right now. In new plants, the new plan by Volkswagen for building some of their electric vehicles is in Eastern Germany. Now, for people who may have looked at the German reunification, actually, when East Germany joined, reunited with West Germany, East German industry did not actually catch up with Western Germany. Actually, what happened was people just moved from East Germany to West Germany. It was easier for people to move than to raise the level of industry. So East German industry actually collapsed by 70%. Industries just shut down. Because when you have such a huge productivity difference, it was what happened in reality was not that capital came into East Germany and East German factories got upgraded and people's wages went up. What happened was people just moved from East Germany to West Germany. So this is something to understand. Partly now, some reversals are happening now when people want to build a greenfield factory. East Germany now has a huge amount of renewable power. 90% of its power is from renewables in former East German regions. This sets the stage for EV vehicles to come in. So some EV vehicles manufacturers have come in and the ecosystem has also come in. So you have the car maker, then the battery maker. They are all coming to Eastern Germany. Especially when you make EV cars, you also want you want to use green energy when possible. I mean, it's just good business sense to use green energy in any case. And green energy in this case is also not Russia dependent. So going to East Germany makes sense. Remember, Volkswagen is a very big company with a lot of plants. So for the bulk of their operations in Germany, they still are suffering from higher energy costs. But incrementally, new plants they're building in East Germany. So that's something which is useful for them going forward. I have a macro view, which I've shared in a recent note. So essentially, I'm expecting this is an expectation, right? It's not an expectation that I expect the war to kind of wind down, hopefully by end of this year. Without that, it becomes very hard to model how German energy costs will go up for Volkswagen across the board. So this will be a cloud on the thesis. So just something to keep in mind. Just to spend like half a minute on the war, I expect that after Russia annexes its the new areas of Ukraine, it did a referendum in. If Ukraine agrees to be neutral, it gives a face-saving way for Russia to withdraw. And that could be one way the hostilities could end. Otherwise, it could be really long drawn out. So this is kind of my hopeful scenario is that the war eases down if both sides take some measures to de-escalate. So that's kind of one cloud over this thesis. Okay, going into the key metrics of Volkswagen. Volkswagen has 55% of its capital structure is debt. The entire market cap is only 75% of its tangible book value. So you're getting a big discount. In terms of price to book, it's even much lower. But tangible book, I think, is closer to use as a measure of value. Because over time, when you've bought other brands, say Skoda was bought and so on and so forth, the value of goodwill of those purchases will inflate book value. So using tangible book is safer to get closer to reality or to be more conservative, in fact. E has been depressed. ROE has been low. But at the same time, it's P at this point is just less than 4. So just something to keep in mind. At the same time, dividend is over 6%. So it meets value criteria in terms of metrics. But of course, your challenge is to make sure it's not a value trap. And that's where its size and scale and how they will achieve economies over time through sharing costs across the platform and standardizing things as they move to electric vehicles. So electric vehicles, there'll be Volkswagen electric vehicles, there'll be Audi electric vehicles, there'll be Porsche electric vehicles, right? So there'll be different brands. but there will be an underlying EV strategy. So this is what makes Volkswagen very interesting, because there are a lot of other players who want to go to EV, but they all have to do it over different brands. Some companies have a single brand. Tesla just has four models. So it's a different equation for Tesla. It's very different for General Motors and for Ford, et cetera. So Volkswagen, they have some of the widest spectrum in brands. They are looking at utilizing economies of scope across their brands. They've tried many different things. Volkswagen has actually even invested in several different small Canadian battery technology companies. People have been exploring many different ways of how to make the best battery or the cheapest lithium or other battery technology. It was not clear that lithium will be the winner. People were exploring many different ways. And that exploration will still continue. But at the same time, Volkswagen has given a clear path of how they will aim to squeeze economies and how they will actually reduce CapEx as a percentage of sale while actually moving deeper into the EV revolution. We have over 24 analysts who estimated 70% upside to the stock. You might wonder why such a large cap company, Volkswagen is almost $75 to $80 billion or 75 to 80 billion euros. Euro and dollar is about par at this time. You would wonder why such a large company has such a big discount. I think one of the reasons could be that one is, of course, there is a war in Europe, on the doorstep of Europe. And this other part is that the free float is really, really low for Volkswagen. It's actually less than 10%. So much of the company is actually not available for anybody to buy, because the holding family, the Piëch and Porsche families, they own about 53%. I have a slide on shareholder mix in a moment. And the German province of Lower Saxony, which was a founding shareholder, has 20%. And there's a key strategic investor, Qatari Investment Authority, has been a cornerstone investor for a long time, with 17%. So all this means that the actual free float is very low. So this also means that there is enough liquidity. I mean, it trades million shares a day, so that's more than $100 million worth of liquidity. So there's enough liquidity for any large fund. But if somebody wants to take a large position, like 5% of the company, it'll be very nearly impossible without moving the price, right? Because the float is so low. Now, I just want to go back to the last slide just to show that there are a few tickers. Just to understand, there is the ordinary share. And the ordinary share is a normal voting share, but the most common share which people buy is Volkswagen 3, which is more available, more liquid. And this is actually a preference share. In preference share, in this context, primarily means that it's a different class of share. It's just a non-voting share. So in the US, you have many companies which have non-voting shares, like Snap and Google has a share class which is non-voting, and so on and so forth. So this is in the same category of a non-voting share. For US investors, when they buy ADR, they have to make sure they buy the right ticker they want. Usually these ordinary shares and preference shares trade in sync. Sometimes in a couple of times in the last 10, 20 years, there has been a skew and the ordinary shares have gone very high when there was a special situation. I don't know if people are familiar, but there was a famous situation when Volkswagen was the largest company in the world. When Volkswagen had options in Porsche shares, and there was a short squeeze in the shares, and the ordinary shares went up quite dramatically. I just want to call out that the ADRs are different for the ordinary shares and the preference shares. So this thesis I've written based on Volkswagen 3 Germany, which is the preference share. Okay. I want to talk about how Volkswagen has recently unlocked value. So Volkswagen's holding company is called Porsche SE, but Volkswagen owns within its group Porsche AG. AG is German for Aktiengesellschaft, which is the similar as limited. It just means a company limited by shares. Porsche AG is the company which got listed. And Porsche AG has a capital base which is divided into 50% ordinary shares and 50% preference shares. Of the preference shares, 25% were sold. So it's only 12.5% of its capital base which is being sold totally. Right now, this company is raising capital at two levels. There's a public sale, and there's also a sale to the holdco. So Porsche SE is buying some shares in Porsche AG directly. So as it's getting listed, so it's kind of like unbundling of a company, right? So Porsche SE ultimately controls Porsche AG through Volkswagen, but they're also buying some of the shares directly. Now, within the free float of 12.5% of capital, Qatar Investment Authority has bought about 5%. They're just below 5%, just to be below the exchange listing requirement. As you might know, if you own 5%, you have special obligations. So Qatar Investment Authority is just at 4.99. So again, the free float for Porsche AG is again very small. I don't have a specific view on Porsche AG. I think the cheaper entity to buy is Volkswagen. But by listing Porsche AG, the entire market cap of Porsche AG is actually equal to the value of Volkswagen. Porsche AG is around 75, 80 billion, which is also the market cap of Volkswagen. Porsche AG usually constitutes about 40% of the operating profit of Volkswagen Group. So essentially by listing a unit which makes 40% of its operating profit, they were able to show a market cap equal to the entire company. So if you buy the parent Volkswagen, you are getting the rest of Volkswagen for free by that logic, right? So that's just something to keep in note. So what is the market saying? Either you can say the market is making a mistake and it's a bargain, or the market is saying that Volkswagen will continue to destroy value and book value will keep eroding as they keep losing money and for a long time. So that's the alternate thesis, right? If the market is right, then market is saying that Volkswagen will continue to destroy value for shareholders. Personally, I think that's not the case because by listing this company, this is a very recent listing. So it's September 29th. So we are just like 2 weeks after the listing. It proves that Volkswagen has this hidden gems, or these gems were actually hiding in plain sight. And this proves the thesis that the group is actually very valuable and actually very, it could be a valuable asset for people who own it. Now, one interesting thing was that when they listed Porsche AG, the total number of shares of the company is actually exactly 911 million shares, a homage to the famous Porsche 911 model. So that was I'm sure they did it to bring some smiles to people. Okay, so I'm kind of coming to the end of the presentation, then I'll take some questions. So I believe that Volkswagen is well positioned to benefit from the shift to EV. They know how to sell cars in more than 150 countries. They have multiple brands. They need to let go of some of their old methods and shift to EV. They are committing several tens of billions of dollars to several different countries and plants. So it's not one big factory serving the world. They're investing 10 billion in Spain, they're investing another 10 billion in another country and so on. So the overall investment is in tens of billions of dollars in the shift to EV. Apart from investing into plants and gigafactories, they're also standardizing their internal platforms, both mechanical and software and battery, to get economies of scale and scope across all their brands. By listing Porsche AG separately, they proved that Volkswagen is actually very, very cheap, because Porsche's market cap is equal to Volkswagen's market cap, while Porsche is only a fraction, maybe at 30-40% of Volkswagen operating profit. So it was a good demonstration of unlocking value. And 50% of the IPO proceeds are earmarked for a special dividend. So Volkswagen's dividend is 6% without counting the special dividend. The special dividend is a one-off. So it's a one-off event for people who hold it in December this year. So you can make a calculation about, that's just a return of capital. So you're getting some of the book value back when they return the dividend. Of course, they're doing this because the holding family will use the dividend to fund their direct purchase of Porsche AG. But for all shareholders, I mean, they also benefit from getting the dividend. I believe that the cash flows are good enough for it to continue to keep the 6% dividend they currently trade at. It's of course, dividend at cost, right? So if the stock goes up 30%, it's not 6% anymore. But at the current prices, it's dividend at 6% if you buy it now. So the current price is a couple of days back. It's about 123 euros. It's near a 52-week low. It's close to a multi-year low if you look at it over time. The actual free float is very less. I believe you're getting this bargain because of the low free float. Keep in mind that there is a war going on. Energy crisis is there. This is a multi-year thesis. So this is for investors who are able to think like owners. If you want to be like the Piëch and Porsche family, this is an opportunity for you to get in. And you will get a 6% dividend while you wait. And you'll get a special dividend as a thank you for, I mean, even if you didn't support the Porsche AG IPO, you'll get the dividend if you're a shareholder in December. So this brings me to the end of my prepared remarks. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roshan, for the presentation and the compelling case you made here. Could you talk a little bit about capital allocation going forward and what do you see in terms of the Porsche stake over time in terms of potential monetization there?
I think given that Volkswagen itself has a low free float, 9%, and they're happy with it, Porsche as well, they might just keep it at that level. They may not plan to keep selling more of it. I believe they can fund their capex through internal cash flows and getting money from the bond market or banks. I don't think they'll keep selling Porsche AG. At best, they might sell another 5%, but it won't be a... They're not trying to get rid of the Porsche AG over time. They will never divest a large position. That's kind of my view on Porsche AG. So because even if you just list preference shares, and these are non-voting shares, currently all of Porsche AG's public listing is just preference shares. Even if it's just non-voting shares, you still have to give them returns on capital, and the family and Volkswagen might decide to keep Porsche close to their heart. So I think this they'll get about $5 billion free cash right now from the IPO. That's good enough for them to use with some leverage to fund investments for the next few years. So that's kind of my view at this time.
What do you think the company could potentially do to highlight the undervaluation here? Is there anything they can do as a kind of a catalyst?
I think the company does not need to, because they're not a traditional company where they buy back shares when it's low and issue more shares when it's high. This is a very traditional family-owned company, and of course, partly state-owned. They have no intention to educate the broader investing public about, hey, it's a bargain, you should buy this. In one sense, they don't really care. There was extreme undervaluation that Porsche was not valued. They proved it by listing Porsche and raising almost $10 billion from the market, right? So they proved it by listing Porsche AG. They don't have to prove that Volkswagen is undervalued. They just proved by, I mean, they proved it indirectly by listing a part of it for almost the same market cap as Volkswagen. So this was a very good reply by Volkswagen without, let's say, doing a series of investor conferences and so on and so forth. Because if you, unless the company is buying or selling shares, you don't actually benefit from the stock price going up for the company, right? So in a way, they don't actually particularly care. So if you take an owner mindset, you can be alongside the state and the families which own it and benefit from this over time. I think Volkswagen has a 50 to 100% upside over 3 to 5 years. That's where it's heading. If they execute even halfway on the strategy, that's kind of how I see this thesis.
Could you talk a little bit about, purely in terms of quality, which automakers globally you admire and respect? So leaving aside the valuation side of things, which auto companies do you think are best positioned to make whatever transition will need to be made over the next decade?
I think so for electric cars, you have the electric supply chain, batteries and so on. Then you still have the rest of the car, which has your wheels, brakes, seats, seat belts. You need to make all of them without defects, without recalls and so on and so forth. And is where Volkswagen's experience curve will be crucial. So the new electric car maker, if they never made cars before and they become make electric cars, their workers in the factories might make mistakes on other parts of the car, brake lights, batteries, seats, etc., etc., right? Leaving aside the battery tech. Now, the car companies which have the best experience curves in producing large number of cars at a very high quality with very low defect rates are the Japanese makers, Suzuki and its subsidiary in India, Maruti. They have done it very well. Toyota has done it globally very well. Toyota makes cars in Japan, US, and so on. Hyundai has also been a big success story at international manufacturing. In South Korea, in the Ulsan plant, then in India, and also wherever they have seen enough demand, they have set up plants across the world. Hyundai also, I believe, makes in the US. So these companies have a big experience curve. The experience curve comes from the knowledge of its workers who have literally made millions of cars. So that is useful when you transition to EV. So, okay, in an EV setup, you need less workers, but having experienced workers is an asset. So that's what will be a good asset for these large manufacturers. For them, the biggest thing is they have to give up on internal combustion engines as they move to EV. So internal combustion engines can be very profitable in because once you've made the model and you can keep, say, milking the model for 7-10 years, it's very profitable in future years. So there is a certain reluctance to move away. But if you don't move away, pure EV players like Tesla and other EV players in China who are pure EV players, they will come and eat your lunch or take away your market share. So for legacy automakers, they have to accept and embrace the change. And Volkswagen will slowly but surely do it, right? They might do it in fits and starts, but they will do it. But I believe Volkswagen is in the top league of companies which know how to make high quality cars in literally, Volkswagen literally makes it in over 70 plants. And they have a very good quality ratio. So I admire Volkswagen, Toyota, Hyundai, Suzuki. These are all the companies which have done it very well. I wouldn't put General Motors and Ford in the same league. They seem to have a lot more recalls than some of these makers. But of course, it's not beyond the capability to also go up the curve and produce good cars going into the future.
That's very helpful. Thank you. I'm curious if you could just talk a little bit about how you have educated yourself on the automotive sector and perhaps how you keep up with developments in the sector.
Sure. So, I mean, I talk to car dealers, I read industry analysis, and I read reports of sales reports, which are car industry reports on how sales is doing across different countries. And I look at things like longevity of models, because that's very important for the car manufacturer to be profitable. If you're forced to introduce a new model every 2 years, or go to a new chassis, new system every 2-3 years, you'll never be profitable, because you'll have to write off all the capex you did too soon. But if you can keep using the same chassis for 10 years while doing 3-4 cosmetic models over those 10 years, then you'll be very profitable. So I have seen how the Japanese and the Korean companies built a good franchise in India. India is a very price sensitive market. They were able to do good quality at a very good price. And therefore, they commanded the respect of the consumer. Indian companies came from nowhere to also build good cars. So the Tata Group in India also built cars. And their two biggest models, they've not been successful in every model they release, but they came from nowhere and they learned how to build cars. So that was also a good achievement. So a lot of it is, because I don't drive a car, so a lot of my research is reading and talking to people in the channels. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Roshan, I think we will leave it there. I would just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again this year and share this investment thesis.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye for now.